Welcome to room 4216. I'm so glad you've come.
Hi, Cecilia.
Hello, Pastor Dave.
And how are we today?
Well, I don't know how you're doing, but I'm doing fine.
Well, I'm doing well, so we are doing fine.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Last week, we were talking about your one cat, but I think you have a second cat, don't you?
Well, I have an assistant editor, if that's what you mean.
Oh.
Yes, his name is Jack, and every time I put room 4216 together, he has to be right there in my arms, helping me to edit.
Oh, does he ever touch the keys?
He has been guilty of that, yes. But every night at 10 o'clock, that means that it's my job to go get his treats.
Oh.
And I have to scatter a handful of them on the floor.
Do love treats.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And he's not happy until he gets his treats.
Oh, my. Well, thanks for sharing about the other cat. Now it's time we go into room 4216. Today, we are going to study about what took place just after God spoke the Ten Commandments.
Are you sure?
So, God had spoken the Ten Commandments, and then the seven commands about how they are to live, to become His people. And it might seem odd, but chapter 24, some unusual things come up. And it's a little bit, the first part's a little bit of a reading, but please be patient. It'll make sense as we move on.
Then the Lord said to Moses,
"Come up to the Lord, you and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel. You are to worship at a distance, but Moses alone is to approach the Lord. The others must not come near, and the people may not come up with him."
When Moses went and told the people all the Lord's words and laws, they responded with one voice, "Everything the Lord has said, we will do." Moses then wrote down everything the Lord had said. He got up early the next morning and built an altar at the foot of the mountain and set up 12 stone pillars representing the 12 tribes of Israel. Then he sent young Israelite men, and they offered burnt offerings and sacrifices, and sacrificed young bulls as fellowship offerings to the Lord. Moses took half of the blood and put it in bowls, and the other half he sprinkled on the altar. Then he took the book of the covenant and read it to the people. They responded, "We will do everything the Lord has said. We will obey." Moses then took the blood, sprinkled it on the people, and said, "This is the blood of the covenant that the Lord has made with you in accordance with all these words." Moses and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and the 70 elders of Israel went up and saw the God of Israel. Under his feet was something like a pavement made of sapphire, clear as the sky itself. But God did not raise his hand against these leaders of the Israelites. They saw God, and they ate and drank.
The first thing I want to note about this reading is it mentioned that the place under God's feet looked like sapphire.
Sounds beautiful.
It does. One commentary said it's the skies of heaven, meaning that God is above the skies of heaven, and his footstool is our heavens. And it gives that allusion to the fact that he's almighty, and that's really what's meant there. Because actually, two things should be also noted. One, no one can see God and live, and yet here they are, seeing God.
You mean the elders. And
but
Moses.
They don't describe God here. So how much they saw of God, we don't know. We don't know.
Another thing that one of the commentaries said that I liked was that they ate and drank. And this was with God nearby.
They had fellowship with God.
Yeah, because eating and drinking is considered a meal, a fellowship, friendship.
What do you do when you're having a friend or you want to get to know a friend? You often
go out to eat or whatever.
Go out to eat, have a meal, yeah. And that's why also there was a fellowship offering. In order to have a fellowship with God, there had to be an offering, a sacrifice. And sacrifices back then were animals that were killed. Some were burned, some not. And I'm not sure exactly in that setting, but I do know two things. One, life was required of a sacrifice. That's why they were killed, and the blood was sprinkled to show that this animal is dead and was sacrificed, because blood is equal to life.
Life.
And that's why we talk about the blood of Jesus giving us life.
So Moses sprinkled blood on the altar to represent life.
Was given so they could have fellowship. A sacrifice was made.
But why was blood sprinkled on the people?
Well, again, to demonstrate that the sacrifice was made. For the people, yeah. And a sacrifice made, you might wonder, why a sacrifice? I don't know if you've been in this situation. I have, because I'm a husband with a wife, and I have done blunders.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I want to say, I'm sorry, what do I do? Often?
Flowers,
a dinner, something. Flowers are great because it's a sacrifice. They're not going to last forever. They're beautiful, but it meant I had to go out. I had to pay money. I had to do something, and I'm giving them to her. They're not going to last. It's not like a vacuum that she can use all the time.
No.
You know? That's the thing about a gift given to a wife, especially, is it is supposed to be something that is truly a gift. Where a vacuum is, you know, just another tool.
It's a use for the household.
And that's why God had them sacrifice animals. They were killed. They were burned because they were no longer useful to the people. But they were to him because it was demonstrating that they were truly sorry.
No, I think they were useful to the people because they were bulls. They could have sired many new...
In that sense, they were useful, but once they were slaughtered and burnt, they were no longer useful.
That is true.
But to God, it was useful because it was showing their heart. All of that points to Jesus. God offered his best, not just a bull, but his best, his son. And his blood was poured out on the cross for you and me. And so here, and so that we can have fellowship with God. And that's, there's a couple parables that talk about how the wedding banquet is coming up where we can feast and celebrate with our God, having a wonderful meal and spending time with him. All of this points to that.
Then the Lord said to Moses,
"Come up to me on the mountain and stay here, and I will give you the tables of stone with law and commands I have written for their instruction."
Then Moses set out with Joshua, his aide, and Moses went up on the mountain of God. He said to the elders, "Wait here for us until we come back to you. Aaron and Hur are with you, and anyone involved in a dispute can go to them." When Moses went up on the mountain, the cloud covered it, and the glory of the Lord settled on Mount Sinai. For 6 days the cloud covered the mountain, and on the seventh day the Lord called to Moses from within the cloud to the Israelites. The glory of the Lord looked like a consuming fire on top of the mountain. Then Moses entered the cloud as he went on up the mountain, and he stayed on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights.
And so Moses was up on the mountain, hidden by the cloud, speaking with God. Two interesting things happen here. first on the mountain and then down below. Well, we'll get to the down below in a little bit, but first on the mountain. God spoke to him and gave him directions of what he wanted in reference to worship, and the first part of that was a place to worship, a tabernacle, as it's called. Tabernacle is just a tent.
Just a tent?
Well, a tent in the sense that you take it down, you can move it, and then put it back up.
According to my reading in Exodus, this was no just a tent.
Well, that is true. First, what was its size, Cecilia?
It was 45 feet long, 15 feet wide, and
15 feet high. If you were reading the Bible, it would talk about 30 cubits by 10 cubits by 10 cubits. And a cubit literally is from your elbow to the tip of your finger. And
that's not a very accurate way of measuring.
That's right. And that's why they stopped using that. It's roughly 18 inches. And so 30 cubits, that's a 1.5 times, so that's 45 feet, as you said, by 15 by 15. And so that was the outer dimensions of this tabernacle. It was made of
All kinds of things,
yeah. Lots of wood was in it, but then it was covered with cloth. On the outside, skins of animals, and on the inside, beautiful fabric and curtains.
And plates of gold.
On the wood, yep. And so it was quite an elaborate thing, but yet it was a tabernacle, a tent. It could be taken down and moved. And so this went with the people as they traveled through the wilderness for 40 years.
Can you imagine a structure of boards and frames of wood and fastenings of silver that held these huge curtains? And these people had to take it down, and it had to be carried, and then they had to set it up again. This was no camp tent.
No, that's true. It was no camp tent. Just to give you an idea, imagine your bedroom at home, 15 by 15. Now, double its height. That's pretty much what the Holy of Holies was. That was the most inner room. And then the room just outside that was called the Holy Place. And that's more like a living room. It was 15 by 20. But again, 15 feet tall, two stories high. We'll talk about that a bit more. But you can get the grasp of the size of this. There's one last thing about the tabernacle. It was set in what they call the courtyard. And the courtyard, what size was that, Cecilia?
150 feet.
Mm-hmm. By 75 feet. By the cubits, 100 cubit by 50 cubit. And the tabernacle, this tent, was set kind of not all the way back to the wall, but two-thirds of the way back in the center of the courtyard. So they traveled around and they stopped. And by the way, they knew where to stop and when to go because by day, a pillar of cloud would settle on the tabernacle. And when it lifted, that was the
time to go.
And at nighttime, within this pillar of smoke was a fire so people could see that God was present even at night. So they picked up and they move and they settle up. And it was always the courtyard, the tabernacle, was always placed in the midst of people. So they put it up, and so people are outside, and they walk in. What do they first find there in the courtyard?
An altar.
Yeah. And this is the place where they could do, there are five different sacrifices at this altar, a burnt offering, a guilt offering, a peace offering, a fellowship offering. Fellowship offering. There were several. I don't remember them all right now, but they were all done there. And right next to it were bronze basins. Not exactly next to it, but within very close range. And these were big, basically big bowls that held lots of water. Because when you are sacrificing animals,
it gets a bit messy.
And that's why also some of the sacrifices were of incense. I remember a song when I was a kid, incense and peppermints. Anyway,
okay.
Incense is a smell it's a unique smell. It's not just a candle, but it permeates and covers things.
Yes, it does.
And it had to because there was so much blood going on there. Because that was the point of a sacrifice. The life was given. And of course, that reminds us that Jesus' life was given for us, sacrificed for us on the altar so that we might be forgiven. Mm. So who could all go in this courtyard?
Any believer could go in to the courtyard.
Any believer. Meaning not just a Jew, it could be a foreigner.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a believer, yeah. So then in the middle of this, we find the tabernacle. And the first room we go into in this tabernacle is the
holy place.
Yeah. And it was 20 cubits by 15 cubits by 15. So that was 30 feet by... No, 20 by 10 by 10.
15.
Yeah, 15 feet by 15 feet by
15 feet.
No, it's a rectangle.
Oh.
30 feet. And do you remember what was in this room?
Yes, there was a table.
Yeah, that was on the north side. The door was always set so the door to go in was facing east. Mm-hmm. I always think the sunrise. Okay, so the table was on the north. That would be to the right.
Mm-hmm. And that table held two rows of loaves of bread. They called that the showbread, and that represented the 12 tribes of Israel. It also represented God's presence.
And so those were always present. Yeah.
And after the Sabbath, the bread was changed, and the priests ate the bread.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a lampstand.
And that was on the south side, or when you enter it, to the left. And if I recall right, it had 7 branches. It was golden.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a fancy name for that one, is there not?
A menorah.
Yeah, you might have heard
kind
of
that.
Kind of
what we think of at Hanukkah, but it's not shaped the same.
Okay. And so that was on the left to give light to the room. And then straight ahead when you enter the room...
was a heavily curtained-off room. That was called the Holy of Holies.
Well, prior and in front of that curtain was an
altar. The altar of incense.
And that's where incense was done each and every day.
Mm-hmm. Not the same incense that were outside the temple, but incense that were sent up to God as another kind of sacrifice.
Which Peter refers to as that our prayers are an incense, a fragrance floating up to him. Also, the book of Psalms speaks about that we can do prayers of incense, meaning our prayers go to him. So that's the holy place. That was entered every day. But then, as you mentioned, behind this nice thick curtain was the Holy of Holies. Now, what was back there? This is a cube room, 15 feet by 15 feet by 15 feet.
One thing and one thing only was back there.
Ark of the Covenant.
Mm-hmm.
The Ark of the Covenant. You've probably seen movies about it. And the movies are sort of accurate, actually, to the size. Roughly speaking, it's a box that's 4 feet by 2 feet by 2 feet. And on the top of it were two angels.
Which, first of all, the top of it was a slab of pure gold.
And it was covered with gold.
Mm-hmm.
It was all gold. And so these angels probably were about 4 feet tall, let's say, and their wings touched. One was at one end, one at the other, and their wings touched in the middle. And in between the wings, that was called the...
mercy seat.
The mercy seat. That's like where God would sit. Now, this room, the priests entered only once a year.
And they entered it to burn incense... as an atonement, not for the whole people, but for themselves. And it was only one priest that entered.
One priest a year. Once a year. He sprinkled blood on the mercy seat, showing that a sacrifice was made for his sins and then incense. This was on the Day of Atonement.
Yom Kippur.
Which it falls in our fall, September-ish, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Yom Kippur means Day of Atonement. And on that day... it was a visual reminder that before the priest went in, he would put his hands on a goat. I believe it was a goat.
Yes.
And his hands on his head, conferring or referring or transferring, I guess you'd say, all the sins of the people to this goat, and then they'd put it out into the wilderness.
Which meant it would probably die.
Very quickly. Very quickly. That's the temple and the worship that God set up for his people. Ah, but there's more. And what's more, I hope if you're a Christian, you can kind of see some of the symbolism. If you're not a Christian, I hope you can grasp some of the symbolism. First, the Day of Atonement. That's the day on which all the people's sins were atoned for. All the sins were transferred to one thing, and it was put out of the city. Well, what did they do with Jesus after the trial, the mock trial, and the ridicule? They made him carry his cross.
And he was put out of the city.
And died. Died very quickly. Just like that goat was. The courtyard, we see that was where people can come. But believers, we can approach God when we believe. Now, the holy place is where daily sacrifices were made to remember God and to seek his guidance. But I want to move to the Holy of Holies for a second. Once a year, the same Day of Atonement, the priest went in and he sprinkled blood for his sins. Oh, isn't this amazing? Jesus didn't have to do that.
No. He sprinkled his blood for our sins.
Yeah. And that's what made his sacrifice so special. He was without sin, and it made him the perfect priest and the perfect sacrifice. He atoned for all of us. And he does so at the mercy seat of God. And it's called the mercy seat because that's where God sits. And his desire is really to have mercy on you and me.
What I like, though, is the part of the story where here is this thick curtain. And right at the moment of Christ's death, this curtain rips right down the middle.
Can you imagine if you were, and I believe there were several priests in the holy place at the time,
mm-hmm.
Where they look up and they see this huge curtain ripped?
Right from 15 feet high.
And they see the Ark of the Covenant?
Which they weren't supposed to see at all.
If they do, they die. And yet they're beholding it? Bet they would have said, "Hey, Bert, I think something's happening here." "You think so, George?" Yeah, wonder what
it
is.
We're going to die.
But they didn't.
No.
And they went out and they told people about this. And then it was said that Jesus died at that moment, the sinless one. And everybody knew who Jesus was in that town. And I bet we'll see some of those priests in heaven. Because they believed the promises of what this all points to. Because, see, the book of Hebrews, maybe someday we'll do the book of Hebrews. It's really kind of cool how it talks about, there's a kind of an outline to the book of Hebrews, a better. And chapter 1 is a better, I think it's angel. And then chapter 3, a better rest. And a better messenger. And chapters 9 and 10 is a better priest and a better sacrifice. And it uses all these pictures of what we just described here in chapters 9 and 10 of what Jesus did for you and me, showing how the tabernacle was set up ready to show us what Jesus did in heaven to take away our sins. And this is where I want to go back now to the holy place. Those two priests, "Hey, George, what happened? I don't know. I think something." "Well, let's talk to God, because we can now." And that's what you and I do. We offer our prayer and our praise and our thanksgivings to God. And we can do so directly. We don't have to stand out in the courtyard. Because, see, only the priests were supposed to go into the holy place, and only one in the Holy of Holies. Well, Jesus is the high priest. He went in, and he lets us have free access now to the holy place, to God. And we do so with our prayers.
The Lamb, one perfect final offering.
The Lamb, let earth join heaven, his praises sing.
Worthy is the Lamb, whose death redeemed his own. The Lamb is reigning on his throne.
Well, next time we'll talk about what happened down below while this was happening up above. The people and Aaron, they made a golden calf. And we'll talk on how that connects with us. But you can write us, including Jack, because he's often on the keyboard, at
info,
I-N-F-O,
at not dash alone,
N-O-T dash A-L-O-N-E,
dot net,
N-E-T. And remember,
we are not alone.
Do come back again to room 4216.
Credits. Our sincere thanks go to Terry Nord and Robert Vaughn for their interlude music.